Welcome to the Steel Study with your hosts, Andrew and Jeremy, where Steelers football comes together with history, education, and flat-out random weirdness. Let the lesson begin.
All right. Welcome. Studians. I haven't used that term on the Steel Study podcast, but welcome, Steel Studians, to episode number 10 of the Steel Study podcast. Andrew, good to see you.
Good to see you, too. It's the Cordell Stewart podcast, brother.
And when I think of Cordell Stewart, I think of January 11th, 1998, and that gut punch of a 24-21 loss to the eventual Super Bowl champions that year, led by John Elway. Denver Broncos, Terrell Davis ran for 139 yards in that game. Jerome Bettis, 105 yards. But Cordell's stat line.
Oh, remind me.
18 out of 36, 201 yards, one touchdown, three interceptions. Ouch.
I was going to talk to you about this a little bit today. There is a romance to sports fandom, right? Mm-hmm. And let me define that for you. In 2004, the Red Sox are down, you know, 3-1 in the ALCS against the hated Yankees. What motivates a Boston Red Sox fan to tune in or even attend Game 5 or Game 6 or Game 7? It's the fact that as fans, we love our team regardless. And when you tell me those things about Cordell, it does not jive necessarily with my memory, because at, you know, 11 and some change years old, Cordell was the epitome of the Steelers for me. Mm-hmm. I loved Cordell. I still love Cordell Stewart. And so that had some context that is a bit painful.
Yeah. Well, I do remember, I mean, for that bad moment, there were so many good moments. I remember my grandfather, huge Steelers fan. We called him Pups. The day of his funeral, we kind of rushed through the service so we could get home to watch the Steelers play. And I think it was I think they were the Titans at that time. But I remember Cordell scrambling for like a, I want to say it was like a 70 or 80 yard
along
touchdown.
Along the far side line,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. I was in Pennsylvania. I was actually visiting my grandmother that day in Pennsylvania.
But I watched it with my brother, my Uncle Motor, my cousins, Ian.
You have
and
an
Chad.
Uncle Motor?
Well, I did. He rest his soul. He's not with us. But yeah, his name was Steve. Awesome guy. We called him Motor. It's Chad and Ian's dad. So you hear me talk about Chad. But we watched it at my cousin Chad Neen's house with my Uncle Motor, my brother Zach. And it was a sad day because it was, you know, the funeral for my grandfather. But, you know, that brought us together as a family. We, no matter what, even if it was a funeral.
Cordell running up the sideline.
That's right.
Is.
And you know what? It was kind of a moment where it was like Pups was looking down on high.
He's the lead blocker for Cordell.
He led that team to victory. But
that was a – man, that – I know where I was, in what room of my grandmother's house. I remember so much about that specific play and the feeling I had about that play. I love that team. The 97 team, I mean, I think we'll talk about this a little bit later, but I think in Cowher's new book, he talks about how that was one of the most talented teams he ever had. And I mean, if you look at that defense, man, the defense had some players.
Yeah, but unfortunately – they gave up 139 rushing yards to Terrell Davis, who, to his credit, was a stud. But we digress, as we do here on the Steel Study podcast. Just want to say thank you for listening to the show. We got great feedback from last week's episode with Alex Kazora. And again, we were super grateful that Alex came on to the show with us. We're so thankful that you're reading our work on the site, listening, sharing. We are now up on Google Podcasts, Captivate. If you just Google the Steel Study podcast, you can find us. Still haven't troubleshot effectively the Apple podcasts. I'm working on that, so that should be up soon. But again, just thank you. And I want to point out, we have another big name guest today, somebody whom I look up to in the world of Steelers journalism, if you will. And that's Dave Bryan, who really started the first Steelers podcast of any significance and meaning. You know, Dave from the Steelers Depot. So we're very pleased and excited to bring that to you later on.
I think I was living in Los Angeles at the time that Steelers Depot started. And I think it was the first time I was getting news, regular news, fan-oriented news about the Steelers that sort of engaged me beyond just, you know, a USA Today article or something like that. I mean, I didn't get the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette in Idaho or, you know, the Pittsburgh Press. So a lot of the news that I was getting about the Steelers was nationally oriented. And so this was very focused, hyper-focused on the Steelers. And that was, I've followed the Steelers Depot since perhaps shortly after their inception. I know that they made a push on social media at the time and, you know, Dave talks about the origins of the site and particularly what it was, you know, in that 08, 09, 2010 era. And it was a forerunner to so many things that you see now.
Right. And a little known fact, yours truly used to write for the Depot back in the day.
Back
in the day when David Todd was on the podcast. And I think it was just Matthew Marksey was a writer at that time. And then I was there. Not that whatever, this gives me any significance, but I was there before even Alex was there. But unfortunately, careers changed, baby on the way. I had to step back. But now we're here on the Still Studying. And who knows, maybe one day, Andrew, somebody's going to be reaching out to us and saying, hey, can we talk to you guys? And, you know, we'll sit down and it'll kind of be a surreal experience.
For sure. Yeah, it's sort of like this was. It was interesting to talk to somebody with a recognizable voice in Steelers fandom and have him respond directly to your questions and answer, you know, in a personal fashion. It was interesting.
And Dave is hilarious.
Yeah. So I said this to Jeremy. The idea that we kept laughing at the end of Dave's responses was certainly meant in with no disrespect, but it was he has turns of phrases that are unexpected, and he has a mode of speaking that you're intently listening and he's incredibly analytical. And then he throws in, you know, a line that sort of just lands unexpectedly and you can't help but laugh. So you're going to hear a lot of laughing here in our conversation. But the dude is really genuinely funny, just sort of off the cuff. And I think it adds a level of enjoyment to the experience just having a conversation with somebody.
Right. And like Alex, Dave is legit, knows his stuff, and that comes through in the interview. But before we get to that, just hitting on a couple news items. You'll hear this being referenced in our interview with Dave. But Dave, speaking of another Dave, David DeCastro, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, was not a participant in minicamp.
I think Bouchette said that exact phrase in his article in The Athletic.
Yes, and not to rip Bouchette's work, rip by meaning still, but just referencing it. You know, there is some concern there. And to further speculation, they brought in Trey Turner, free agent guard, to kick the tires on him to see, something's there.
I liked Dave's response, though, in particular. I thought it was a smart take, and I hadn't considered that. I'm not gonna divulge what he says right now. But I liked his take, and I took a lot of stock in that because, you know, it's June.
Yeah.
We still have, you know, 80 days until kickoff or something like that. 80 plus days until the start of the season, and anything can happen in 80 days. And you know, so we'll see what happens. And I think Alex said this last week. There's gonna be changes to this roster in August. So just sit back, let's wait. And I don't necessarily want to diagnose this issue as some real problem just yet.
Right. And then citing someone else's work from The Athletic, Mark Cabali, he talked about players whose arrows were pointing up or pointing down following minicamp. And to Andrew's chagrin, Dwayne Haskins' arrow is pointed down, according to Cabali. Didn't cite really a lot of evidence there, but Cabali said that things were set up in minicamp for him to succeed, and other than showing a strong arm, he really didn't impress. Your take?
Yeah, we talked about this a little last night, just personally, you and I. And I think one of the things that we are not taking into consideration when it's concerning Haskins is I think he's also learning a bit of what it takes to be a pro. Mm-hmm. You know, Tomlin alluded to that, at least to a certain extent, in the sense that he's learning who Haskins is as a person. And I've said this before, but I don't trust the Washington football team to produce any level of consistency that would help a young player. And I think Haskins is pretty young in terms of his actual age. He's pretty young, despite the fact that he's been in the league 2 years. He was a one-year starter at Ohio State, which is not the greatest thing in the world. But I mean, the kid's young, and I think he's probably learning a lot. To Kabali's point, too, though, maybe it was an easy minicamp designed to help him succeed, and maybe he didn't succeed as, you know, some people would have hoped. But I'll give him a little bit of room. It's really the first time that he's done anything football-related with a Steelers helmet on.
Right. I did a little investigation into Haskin last week. I think it was on Friday, just looking at his stats, going all the way back to high school. And one of the things that really stood out to me is the number of plays that Haskins had where he dumped the ball off to a running back, or it was a short pass that then went for a big gain.
Right.
So really calling into question his ability to drive the ball down the field, or just, you know, Dave talks about depth of target. You know, is that a limiting factor for him? But again, the story on Haskins won't be told until training camp. It's a good story. Is it going to work out? We don't know, but it's something that we're excited to see how it plays out.
Oh, did you see that the Steelers just came out with news in regards to training camp?
Yes.
It will not be held
in
La Trobe. It will not be held at St. Vincent's.
Well, hopefully they still give fans the opportunity to go and see training camp. I know Alex had invited us out to catch up with him when he's there. You know, we're going to try to get out. We'll try to coordinate schedules and report from that, but that is a little bit of a blow. You know, to the morale of fans everywhere, that it won't be in La Trobe.
I'm concerned that ushers in a brand new era for Steelers football. And I'm not saying that they don't want to go to La Trobe, but the ease of staying at home for training camp was made evident when Chip Kelly came to the Eagles and cut all ties to Lehigh Valley.
Yeah.
And the Eagles have remained at the NovaCare Center in South Philadelphia for the last 6 years, I think, or 7 years. And I that was an experience. I used to go to Westchester University, which is right around where we are now.
Yeah.
Lehigh Valley. I don't know. There was something about your team going away that I don't know remains a part of football overall anymore. And I know the Steelers were perhaps a last holdout. I know the Cowboys go to where do they go? Southern California?
Who cares?
Anyway. Just point being is, like, I like that idea of them going away.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's hope it's not an end of the tradition, but it could be a convenient way of, you know, ending the travels to La Trobe. And then finally, Andrew finished up the second installment of the Big Ben project. It was great. You could read that on the site. I posted an audio version of that. We'll have an audio book completed when the text is fully completed. But we're looking forward to his final installment, and then I can unleash my Findlay, Ohio section of the text. Andrew, when can we expect the final part of the first chapter?
Yeah, I thought it was going to be tomorrow. It's not going to be tomorrow. So probably over the weekend, but most likely
Monday.
Come on,
Monday. Man. I'm jonesing.
I know.
Part two was good.
Part two.
Writ large.
Yeah, writ large. You like that.
Yeah, I had to Google that.
The third installment is shorter and will be available on Monday as this last one was.
And then in friendly competition, my section on Findlay, Ohio is just going to blow yours out of the water.
That's fine.
Just saying.
That's fine.
It's competition.
That's.
It shouldn't be fine. Come on, you're supposed to talk a little trash.
I don't want to talk trash, dude.
Whatever. You're lame. Anyway, without further ado, it is time for the man of Steelers Depot, the brain trust, their originator, the pioneer, the innovator, super cool guy, good guy, really enjoyed him.
Gave us a lot of time, too.
He did, and thankful for that. And we are proud to introduce Mr. Dave Bryan to the Still Study podcast. Enjoy. All right. Well, here we are on episode 10 of the Still Study podcast, and super excited to have with us the George Washington of Steelers podcast, the Dave Bryan from the Steelers Depot. Dave, thank you so much for joining us here this evening.
My pleasure, guys. Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday.
Well, hey, Dave, we're going to jump right in. You know, just the depot has grown. Again, we were talking before we got on air here. Just you guys have been around for such a long time. I think you said around 2008, it's 2021, obviously. But if you could just talk about your connection with the Pittsburgh Steelers, how your passion and your fandom started, and then ultimately how that kind of morphed into, you know, what you're doing today with Steelers Depot.
All right. Where do I start? I guess around, you know, I'm born and raised in Northwest Florida in the Pensacola area and lived there a good chunk of my life. And I guess around, I don't know, I guess I was about 4 years old. My old man was a Cowboys and a Dolphins fan, Cowboys / Dolphins fan. He liked the Cowboys because of Roger Staubach being in the Navy and all, and he followed him a little bit, you know, his career in the Navy. So I think that was his attraction to the Cowboys. And the Dolphins, I don't really know what, I mean, obviously being in Florida, I think that had a lot to do with it. And obviously the Dolphins were good in, you know, I guess the early 70s and all like that. And just being the bratty little kid, and, you know, that I was, and grown into a bratty adult now, but just wanting to root against the old man, I guess, you know. And it seems like the Cowboys were playing the Steelers there in a, I don't know, I was about 4 years old, so I guess it was about the 1970 two season, I guess. And I just remember my old man watching the game and getting upset, and I figured, well, let's root for the team that the old man's rooting against there. And it obviously didn't sit well with him, and I liked that feeling. And I don't know. I just I guess from there on, it was everything had to be Steelers. It had to be, you know, big Pirates fan. I think baseball really was my first love, as a kid growing up, down there, and, you know, played a lot of T-ball and youth baseball and things of that nature. But, always it suddenly became, I guess, you know, recollection from about six or seven on, just everything had to be black and gold, either Pirates or Steelers, and, you know, jackets. I mean, back then, now remember, this is back when the earth was cooling. You know, you had the Sears or Roebuck catalog. That's the only way that you got merchandise back then, man. In fact, you can Google some of that stuff, some of those old ads out of the old catalogs. Yeah. I think you had a choice like, I don't know, three jerseys. I think it was Mean Joe Green, Terry Bradshaw, and Franco Harris. And that's where I guess the Steelers / Pittsburgh fandom started at there. And, you know, just, you know, obviously the Steelers became very prominent during the 70s. And boy, being a kid, you know, growing up, going to school, and not many, you know, obviously where I grew up, not many, you know, Steelers fans there and all. And you were kind of the cock of the walk, if you will, you know, back then as a kid in grade school, you know, walk around with your Steelers book bag and jacket and those kind of things. So, you know, I guess the that's a long answer to a question there, but that's the root of, I guess, the fandom. And obviously, you know, became a Penguins fan, and, man, I remember rooting for the Pitt Panthers, and, you know, always trying to catch any ball game of theirs, you know, that we would get down there in the South and all like that as well too. So, that's how it all started with me and my Pittsburgh sports fandom.
Is there a, I grew up out West. I grew up in South Central Idaho, and being a Steelers fan out there in the early to mid 90s was a bit difficult because it wasn't, you know, the Sunday NFL ticket. It wasn't sort of every day or every Sunday that you got to see a Steelers game. So in the 70s and early 80s, what was it like being a fan outside of the, you know, outside of Western Pennsylvania, how often could you see them actually play, and how did you follow along per se with the team?
I was that kid that had to get in the newspaper every morning and read the baseball box scores and football box scores. And we didn't have, you only had three channels back then, you didn't have all the cable and all like that. So, you felt pretty lucky if the Steelers were like the game of the week. Now, obviously once they started winning and all like that, they became a bigger draw. And, I can't remember, but I do remember I grew up Roman Catholic as well too. So I apologize for that. But, having to go to church and out to dinner after that, knowing a Steelers game was going to come on, because we were Central Time Zone, and that meant, obviously 12 noon is when, if the Steelers played the early game, come on at 12 noon, and you're trying to badger the folks to hurry up and get home, and if something, obviously they had some plans. Football, my dad didn't. My dad was a Cowboys and a Dolphins fan, but he didn't set the, he didn't set the alarms by it. If it was on, it was on when he was home, but it wasn't like he beat feet to get us back home. If we were home, we watched the games. And so, it was hit or miss. It was obviously very hard to be a fan, because you're trying to read what you can out of a local fish wrap, if you will. And really all the time, unless it was a huge breaking story, really the only thing that you had was, the box score, and I had every baseball and football card imaginable, and you study the stats on that. So that's what it was like trying to get information on your favorite teams there, and especially in the early to late 70s and on into the early 80s.
Right.
I love that story so much.
Yeah. So that's the origin of your fandom, Dave. And then, kind of moving forward to when the idea for the Steelers Depot kind of came into existence, how did that passion for the Steelers kind of manifest itself into the site and then the podcast as we know it today?
Well, the internet age, when it came about, really captivated me. I thought it was amazing. And primarily, I've always been into, since fantasy football came about, I'm talking what 30 years ago, I guess. We always did fantasy football, and then once the internet came along, you always like to do your studying and get online and do that kind of stuff. So I was a part of a local league that really is still running, if you can believe it or not, after all these years. I think it's 30 years old now, and we still do it. We still have a lot of the original owners in that, and we used to do it the old pen and paper way and box score and all like that. But my attraction to the internet, always was fascinated with how not only the internet, but how the internet worked and how web pages were built and all like that. So, first and foremost, I got into just learning basic HTML so I could create, my own league fan page on the old AOL free page accounts and those kind of things there, just so we could update the standings and do that. And I guess really, over the years, learning more and more about the internet and, how people were making money on the internet, and that always attracted me. So basically, as a hobby, I started building kind of, came across a couple of programs that taught you how to build websites and include, like RSS feeds in them that had, that with affiliate links in them that, somebody would come to your site and click on a link and go buy something, then you'd get a small commission for that. So, just out of trial and error, I said, let me build a Steelers site, kind of a merchandise, affiliate site, if you will, out of one of these programs, A, just to see if I could get it to work, and B, see if I can make a few nickels that way to help pay for the hobby. So the first incarnation of Steelers Depot back in 2008 was actually just kind of a affiliate, store landing page, if you will. Wasn't a blog. Now at that same around that same time, blogging started to become this thing, okay, and WordPress came about, and blogs started to pop up all over the place and all like that. And I said, why don't I try my hand at that? So I kind of switched Steelers Depot over from being a full time kind of affiliate, storefront, if you will, into kind of a, I think it was like partial storefront with a blog attached to it. And, just started writing about stuff, really. And, now if you know my background, you know, my education and all like that, my English teacher, is probably rolling over in her grave right now. I can't believe that I actually write and talk for a living. I don't do it well, but I must do it well enough at this point. So, she probably wouldn't believe it, to know what I'm doing now that way. But, it's just, and then I guess it was around 2009, later 2009, is when it kind of became a full-fledged blog. It started making a little bit of money, and then that's kind of how things went there.
Awesome. And obviously it's, I would say the dominant, the primary Steelers website out there. I think it's the first stop for a lot of fans. I know for myself, for Andrew. So looking at the site today, what does it take to operate the site in terms of generating content? And how has that changed over the years? I know you said in 08 it was more of an affiliate marketing page, a storefront. How has that transformed over the years to the version it is today in 2021?
I mean, I don't know where to start on answering that question. I mean, it obviously takes a lot of work, and Twitter coming along when it did helps kind of help you keep an eye on multiple things. And what is it? I guess the root of your question is, what does it take? It takes about 22 hours a day, Wow. I mean, it's a passion. They tell you, if you do something you like, you never work a day in your life and all. And, no 2 days are alike that what we do, and whether it be news or, aggregation type blogging or original content or film study and all, there's always something to do or always something to write about. And that's really been the case now for, 8 or 9 years now. So, and obviously the more good people that you have working for you that kind of get what we like to call is the site voice, if you will, and, have some, can release, let go of that fanboy side of them and become more of an analyst, obviously helps. I don't know exactly when it happened, but it does happen if you do this long enough. You'll always be a fan, but you don't punch holes in walls when they lose, if that makes sense. Yes. That side of it there. It's more of, this is what I do. My job is to cover the team, good or bad, and as objectively and as thorough as possible. And there's always something to do when it comes to this site now. I mean, right. Even in the off season, and thankful the NFL calendar is set up the way that it is now, that really the only real dead time of the year that you have is really the time that we're in right now, the kind of 4 weeks that starts right after the mandatory mini camps in up until the start of training camp goes. But lot of long hours, a lot of early mornings, but thank the Lord blessed me with a lot of dysfunctions, and one of those dysfunctions is the inability to sleep. So
Dave, do you ever have I know you talked about just being able to be objective with the team. Do you ever have those moments where after you know, a heartbreaking loss, or just a devastating loss like the Cleveland playoff game last year. Do you have those moments as a fan before you get on the site to you know, crank out content where you get down, or is that completely gone?
I mean, you're like any fan, you're disappointed, you know? I mean, look, I mean, like I said, I've technically, I guess, been a fan of this team for, let's see, I'm 53 now and about four, so almost 50 years. So obviously, you don't like losses, but there's the damn part of it, and then there's, all right, got to get busy. I'm more into now. The thing that drives me now is finding the who, what, when, where, why, and how the loss happened or the win happened, right. and all. So, it's hard to describe it, but you know the point when you reach it, I guess. As far as where you're not, look, I've gone to the hospital a few times after some Steelers losses, some of my own doing and some of other people's doings, if you know what I mean. I have shed a lot of blood, I guess, for this team over the years. But I mean, I don't want to say it's a job, because it's not. It's just a passion. You learn not to. You just learn not to let it wreck your hour, day, week, and all those things.
It almost sounds like in Buddhism they talk about achieving nirvana. It's almost like a Steelers enlightenment that occurs.
You know what? I have one of my new tattoos is the symbol for mindfulness. Mm-hmm. And really it's derived from Buddhism and all like that. And mindfulness is a state of, being appreciative right where you are right now, right this very moment, you know, always trying to live in, the moment and be appreciative of what you have and those kind of things. And I purposely got it on my left, inside forearm there. So I see it all the time to kind of remind me of that. So, life is full of ups and downs, no matter who you are. And, you know, the things that drive people crazy, or people worry about things that have already happened or things that are that might happen, and that'll certainly shorten your life if you do that. So I really try to maintain a focus of kind of living in the now.
Awesome.
So I didn't get too deep on you, did I?
No, that's great.
I think that's a good message, because one of the things that drove, of course, you and Alex and Jeremy and I to do this is we really love the Steelers and we love the game and we like watching football. For me personally, I love college football and weirdly high school football, especially here in the state of Pennsylvania. And there's a, you know, when you watch a game like the Steelers versus the Browns and it's a awful loss and you feel a little bit gutted, there is a moment when you can reflect and you know, realize it's fun. It's a game. I'm perfectly fine tomorrow. But I think one of the things that I'm able to find from your site is a bit of solace in where you were talking about, you know, you're explaining these things or explaining the losses in a way that can remind you of, yes, this is fun. This is a game, but can also teach you some things. And I think that's where Jeremy and I are most interested is understanding a lot of this from a perspective that maybe we couldn't have growing up, you know, before the internet or before, you know, The Athletic or whatever else informs our opinions and our views today. I don't really have a question. I just think that's a really important point that you just made.
Well, you know, hopefully it's some sort of therapy in the site in and of itself, of the fact that, you know, and look, you know, during games, I'm charting stuff and all like that, because, you know, the fan that might get mad and, you know, immediately or during the game or after the game, we want to try to play a part and help bringing them off the ceiling, either good or bad, you know, and, you know, this is why this happened. And, you know, do they have the ability to fix this? Do they have, you know, do they have, you know, the personnel to do it? You know, why did it, you know, understanding, understanding the why of the loss or a win can sometimes help you, I think, cope with either or better. And we are constantly trying to dive deeper and deeper into aspects of the game. Obviously, we have done film work for years, analytics and all like that, but we're constantly trying to push ourselves to go deeper and deeper into all these different areas, not only for our own, because look, a lot of our own stuff, our own content starts with us asking our own selves questions and then attempting to try to answer that. And oh yeah, by the way, as part of me answering that, I'm going to show you how I went about answering it and what I think the answer is. And that's kind of always, you know, Steelers Depot, you know, the mission statement is always to do more and more and more and go deeper and do what no one else does. And, right. You know, that's what we constantly strive to do on the site.
And I think a perfect example of what you're talking about there, Dave, is I know that you do a lot of those contextualization pieces. I know right now you're looking at Roethlisberger. I think it's his deep throws over the past 5 years. But just some of those articles you put together. When we talked to Alex last week, I know he said out of a conversation that the two of you had, he looked at Alex Highsmith's third down rushes. But I think it's that specificity that really you're able to look at the game film, but then see the underlying statistics that led to the outcome. And that I don't think any other site does that. And I think that's really the one of the many values of the Depot.
Well, I appreciate that. And we have been fortunate now. I mean, we've added several more very, very talented X's and O's guys that you know, have really grown up on the Depot, if you will. I think it's amazing that people tell me, I read this back when I was 14 years old, you know, and you know, those kind of things there. But I think in today's age of the internet and advanced statistics and all 22 and all like that, it's more than just yards per carry. I mean, yards per carry was great when I was a kid. I mean, that's all you had to measure things by was yards per carry, yards for, you know, I really yards per attempt wasn't even a thing back then, you know.
Right.
But I think, and you know, I obviously live in Las Vegas, Nevada right now, and I'm not afraid to go see the man every now and then. And, you know, if the more you can get into some of these deeper analytics and all, you know, can help you with some predictive things as, you know, on top of that stuff too. So, look, you know, Alex, you know, Alex, just in a single podcast sometimes will spawn – he'll say something that might spawn an idea for me to dig deeper in, or vice versa, or what have you. So, you know, in addition to the podcast, I guess being something entertainment and hopefully educational to the people that listen to it, it's also beneficial for me and Alex as we do it, you know, because of you know, some of the ideas. And And all, I mean, we've had some great, great conversations, especially pre-draft conversations over the year where, you know, he'll say, you know, go back and look at this, or, you know, look at this player, look at this game, and those kind of things. So not only is the podcast, you know, I guess something that helps others. I mean, it helps Alex and myself while we do it.
Right. Right. And kind of shifting gears here a little bit, Dave, just because we want to be respectful of your time before we shift into the Steeler side of things. How about
I don't go to bed till 3 o'clock in the morning. So and it's 6 o'clock here. So
my wife actually, she took our three kids to the beach today solo. So she's on the drive back with three tired kids, and she just texted me two of the three are crying. So. That's code for, hey, be ready. But just in terms of, you know, I know over the years I've heard in your podcast, you reference, you know, your liking for metal. I think Motorhead is one of your bands. I know that, animals, dogs specifically have been a big part of your life. We talked before we got on air about the coffee business, I guess. What are some of your interests outside of the Steelers, your passions beyond the black and gold?
Obviously, I played in a lot of bands when I was younger, and growing up when I grew up, heavy metal was what I took to there. So, into a lot of, Black Sabbath, Iron Maiden, UFO, Motorhead, and, even some of the hair metal stuff, I get into. So, not a day goes by that I don't listen to something, as far as that goes. Other interests. Now, obviously, we've always had dogs around the house here, and we don't have kids, so we spoil them like they're our own. So, dogs are a big part of my life. Trying to think what else has my interest. I mean, any sports. I mean, really, I can watch any game, competitive baseball, football. I'm not as, I lost a lot of money on basketball years ago, so I'm not as big as watching basketball because I've gotten kicked into you know what a few times with that. But hockey, I'm a huge hockey fan. Hockey's probably my second favorite sport to the NFL. So if there's a game on, obviously watching that. You'll probably find this the older you guys get here, but it takes a lot to interest me now. And obviously, look, I'm glued to the computer, or my phone, a good 20 something hours a day. I have to kind of force myself to carve out time to watch this show or that show. I like old military war documentaries and stuff like that. I've gotten into that over the years. Not be honest with you, not too much out of that. I mean, sports is my life for the most part, and I stay mostly in tune with that. There's, I don't set the VCR or DVR to record too many things outside of sports these days. I am a huge coffee, I still am a big coffee drinker, and was I started working for a coffee company years ago down in the south there, old company called Hill and Brooks Coffee Company in Mobile, Alabama. Started on a route there and got promoted to district sales manager of Savannah, Georgia. Moved to Savannah, Georgia for 2 years. Took that branch from the 13th, the last place branch in the company, to the second branch, only second to Mobile, which you were not going to, there's no way you're going to overtake Mobile's branch and all like that. And went to Leroy Hill, who was still alive at the time, the owner, and basically said, look, I need some more money to do this. And, he used a couple unpleasant words in there, something about putting things where they don't belong or something like that. And like 4 days later, put my house on the market there, and my no compete clause had run back home. I still had a house back in Pensacola, and went back home and started a coffee company from scratch there. Ran it, like I said, for about 9 years, and saw the industry start changing. Made a lot of money, but it got to the point where I was going to have to expand and spend more money to make more money. I took a deep look inside myself and wondered if I still had the passion to do that. I didn't. So I had somebody willing to buy the company at the time. So I sold the company at the time. But I love coffee. I mean, I'll never turn down a cup of coffee.
What is there is a clearly a drive deep inside of you to do things to the highest level possible, whether it's the coffee business or the Steelers Depot. What is that? Where does that come from?
My old man, rest in peace, get kicked out of your house at about 14 years old. Told that you won't ever amount to anything. And, stop reading those damn box scores and pay attention to your studies. Those box scores are never going to make you any money. You need to work. You better be prepared to work. Get out there and work. No more free rides here. And, I was unfortunately, a full blown, alcoholic and drug addict by the age of 8 years old. And, started spiraling down the wrong ways. And if you don't follow the rules, you're out on the street. So, try living out of a station wagon for a couple weeks out and showering out at the beach, and that'll get your mind right. And I had a boss, I lied about my age to get work, and you could do that way back in the day there. I worked for a pizza place, worked for a guy there. I think I was like 16 years old at the time. And unfortunately, because of the drugs and alcohol, I don't remember too much. I'm missing chunks in my life because of that. But I had a boss tell me, I was 16, I was assistant manager of this pizza place. And he said, Dave, he said, always remember this. He says, work hard, play hard, sleep hard. And I don't know what it is, but that always stuck to me. And I'm an Aries, so I think that comes with it as well too. I've always been driven to succeed and be the best. And I guess a lot of that's where it's rooted from.
I appreciate you sharing those personal details. It's just hearing your voice. I mean, we've never met in person before, but just hearing your voice, there's clearly an undying passion in you, and I think that's a lesson for a lot of people, especially people, you know, looking to pursue something in particular, like Jeremy and I and the Steel Study. I just, you know, listening to you, there's there's an infectious energy that I wanted to make note of and ask about. So I appreciate you sharing that.
And Dave, speaking of your drive, we know it's really all about the Steelers, and kind of shifting gears here. You know, this is it's an exciting year. Because, you know, a lot of new pieces with Najee Harris as the first round pick, a lot of new pieces on the offensive line, a lot of question marks on the offensive line. But in looking at this team in 2021, what makes this team different from teams that you've covered in previous years?
That story's still being written, I think, right now, through training camp and all like that. I will say this. You obviously got a veteran quarterback in Ben Roethlisberger. Look, they've been talking about the Ben Roethlisberger window closing since, I think, 2008. The window's closing, and here we are, 13 years later. Father Time's undefeated, and you obviously have a veteran quarterback in Roethlisberger in the twilight of his career. The fortunate thing with him is he's another year further removed from the elbow surgery and all like that. A totally remade over. I mean, there's so many questions about this offensive line right now. Not so worried about really at this point right now, the quarterback position or the running back position or the wide receiver position, or for the most part outside of maybe, some depth issue at tight end, not really the tight end position as well, but the offensive line, there's so many questions that need to be answered. And yeah, you can rah-rah all you want during the offseason and say, we're going to be aggressive, we're going to attack, we're going to be physical and all like that. But until you show that on tape, I mean, it's all words and all. So that's something that really you kind of not – I mean, obviously, the offensive line has not played great the last 2 years, specifically there. So this is a weird time to have to go through that with a quarterback that's obviously not very mobile. So that's obviously a different something that's different, just let alone from last year's team. Now, however, I don't expect this offense to be as bad as they were last year. It'd be very hard for them to be as bad as they were last year, especially in a running game. Now, when you flip over to the defensive side of football, last year, man, they had the team. Last year, if they were going to win it, last year was probably the team they should have done it with. I think it was kind of easy to see that coming, that they were going to have a good defense, especially against the pass. Bud Dupree obviously had been coming into his own. T.J. Watt, able to get pressure, sacks. They were able to their adjusted net yards for passing attempt stat on the defensive side of the ball was excellent, pretty much throughout the season there. That defense is going to take a step back this year. I don't see any way that it does it. To what degree, though, is the big question there? And can the offense – The improvements that the offense makes in 2021, can those help offset whatever backsliding this 2021 Steelers defense has. Look, they got a fantastic front there in Tuitt and Hayward and Tyson Alualu and TJ Watt. Obviously, a lot of pressure is going to be on Alex Highsmith to sort of pick up where Bud Dupree left off. But they did lose, Steven Nelson during the offseason. They cut him, and Mike Hilton left during free agency. That Mike Hilton's going to be a tough body to replace there in that slot, man, and especially as much sub-package defenses are asked to play around the league there, and that's some questions that need to be answered on defense. So as far as different, it's hard to go back in years and say compare this because the game has changed so much too over the years. I mean, 15 years ago, you're talking about really a lot of run heavy fullback driven offenses, a lot of heavy personnel groups, and now you have three wide receivers on the field for almost every play. The fullback's almost extinct at this point. It's more of a horizontal game now, so it's hard to take a team from 10 years ago and kind of compare it to a team now and say, well, and compare and contrast the differences there. But I think you can look at this year's team and last year's team, and you have to have, like I said, you have to have questions about the offensive line. On the offensive side of the ball, can they run the football when they want to run the football, and can they run it successfully when they do? And then on the defensive side of football, can they still get after the passer, put pressure on the quarterback, get the sacks, get occasional turnovers, and keep that adjusted net yards per passing attempt stat under 5.9?
Right.
Speaking of the offensive line, what do you make of that, of the DeCastro issue or non-issue?
I think it's too early to jump off the ledge right now. There's something obviously going on because he didn't practice. But I really think, and we'll obviously see, we don't know if something happened recently, and obviously the Steelers don't have to provide that information during this time of year. There's no injury reports or anything like that. I feel like he probably had to have some sort of procedure done, whether it be a knee cleanup or hernia or what have you, core muscle injury or something that they're letting him heal up from. I think unless something happened recently with DeCastro in his mindset or an injury that has him thinking retirement, I think he would have retired way back earlier in the offseason, as far as that goes. So I would be pretty shocked if it is something about DeCastro. And why would he show up at mandatory minicamp of all things if he, even if it was for just one practice, if he was thinking about, really retiring. Now, it's definitely a possibility. I don't think you can completely rule that out. Once again, though, if something like that came about here in the next few weeks, we found out DeCastro was retiring, I would think it would be something that happened with him either mentally or physically within the last, I don't know, 5-6 weeks or so that got him going that way. So once again, I mean, you can read tons of speculation out there on the internet right now, but it's just that right now. It's speculation.
Right. And I think the thing with DeCastro, I think his play isn't what it was obviously when he first came into the league, but with all the new faces on the line, potentially, rookie starting center, I think in terms of just veteran leadership, should he be lost to an injury or, worst case scenario, if he retires, again, I know that, we're forecasting and we're playing the hypothetical game. I think there could be an impact from that perspective as well, but, time will tell that story. Kind of backing up, Dave, and going back to Roethlisberger, I still think he has what it takes to get it done. Again, he's not going to be, running around on the field like he used to, juking defenders and firing a 60-yard bomb down the field. But what do you think that he has left? And in terms of Mason Rudolph, I know that he was up for an additional year, and there's speculation that he would take over as an interim should Ben retire after this year. And then you throw Haskins in the mix. I guess two-part question here. Do you think that Roethlisberger has what it takes to get it done? And then how do you see the Rudolph-Haskins saga playing out?
I guess you have to define to me what is get it done.
So I would say at least winning a playoff game, because, you know, over the last few seasons, that's kind of been difficult for Roethlisberger. Or does he have what it takes to win a Super Bowl, I guess, ultimately?
I truly believe the 2021 season is going to come down to more than just can Roethlisberger do it. I think they're going to have to rely on, you know, you're going to have to run, you have to be able to run the football when you want to run it. You have to run it successfully. You have to take a lot of pressure off Roethlisberger this year. You cannot expect him to drop back 35, 40, 50 times a game and do that kind of stuff. Look, he has become a you know, you think back to some of the comments I think Emmanuel Sanders said after he had left, talking about, well, you know, Ben's not that cerebral of a quarterback and all like that. I really think you've seen Roethlisberger become a more cerebral quarterback since then. I think a good illustration of that was that Philadelphia Eagles game when, his eyes got wide as saucers when he recognized that coverage and changed it. And I believe that might have been on the on the Chase Claypool touchdown there. He knows what he's looking at, but he also knows what he likes as well too. And Look, he's not the kind of extend to play quarterback that he once was that kind of made him who he was. So I think he really has to play within a system a lot more than he's ever had to do it. You know, the last couple of years really have been get the ball out quickly. I think you're still going to see that, because the last thing you want with the with his age and the amount of injuries he's had, you don't want him taking a lot of hits and laying on his back a lot there. So the confines of the offense, I think the question needs to become more, can the Steelers get it done versus Roethlisberger get it done? Because I really think it's become more than just, look, it's a quarterback driven league, and it always, you know, it always will be. You need guys in there that can drive the team down the field and, you know, at the end of the game and win a football game for you. So to that aspect, do I think he can do it? Yes. He needs to get that deep ball a little bit more on track. Need to see him connect a little bit more on that. And we need to see that average depth of target come up on him, man. It's just too low. That catch short, run long, just is not going to cut it. You got to be able to make some of those more of those intermediate throws from the 8 to 12 yard mark and get those done. I kind of wonder if he can do that. I'm not saying he can't, but, you know, from what we've seen the last couple of years, he needs to get that aspect of it done. So I think it is more of a question. Yeah, look, I mean, if he can play within the confines of the offense and that offensive line is up to snuff, yeah, I think he and them can get it done. Now, I'm not expecting a 12-win season or anything along those lines there. I think this is going to be a highly, highly, highly competitive AFC North. I think all four of them teams, I bet, beat the snot out of each other this year. And then, look, you look at the AFC North in general, they got a tough schedule, all four teams, because of the division that they play in and the rotating NFL schedule there. So, yes, if he stays healthy and that offensive line plays okay and they don't have the drops that they had last year and they're able to run the foot, there's a lot of ifs there. You see what I'm saying? That's why, yeah, it goes back to, I think, yep, there's a lot of questions about this offense. But, I can see this team from where I sit right now at least making it to the playoffs and potentially winning a game. And, right, you know, once you get into the tournament, you know, I think it's more on your defense, to be honest with you, at that point. Obviously, at some point, if you're going to make a run to the Super Bowl, you need to have your less dominant side usually carry at least one game on a playoff run there. Right. So that's where I'm at right now.
And one of the things that should aid Roethlisberger this year, because obviously, you know, he's a different version of himself. It's probably more reminiscent of Peyton Manning in his final year when he won the Super Bowl, probably more arm strength than Manning had that year. But with the addition of Harris at running back, you know, I mean, there's a growing folklore behind Najee to where he, you know, he's being touted almost as the savior. You know, I know that's pretty lofty, but I think if you look at his tape from Alabama, he's not the home run guy, but he seems steady and consistent. 10, you know, 20 yards would be a decent carry for him. But how do you see Harris rejuvenating this running game? And then in turn, what impact does that have on Roethlisberger and his quality of play overall in the offense?
It's all about successful run rates, and that's going to be the biggest thing with him. This is obviously a Steelers offense, a running game that's been well under 50% in their success rate. Instead of 1 or 2 yards on first down on a run, when the defense knows a run's coming, you know, on first and 10, a successful run's 4 yards or more. You got to have a lot more of those. On second down, you need 50% of the yards needed for that to be a successful run. On third and fourth down, if you do run on those downs, especially in short yardage situations, you need to pick up the first down if you hand the running back a football there. That's the key area where Najee Harris can obviously help this team. It's not about yards per carry, because look, if it's if it's second and one and you get 2 yards and you did that 10 times in a game, you're only going to be averaging 2 yards per carry, you know. But in the end, look at all those successful runs, you move the chains on and all like that. This is obviously a guy that comes out of a offense in Alabama. He's had several different offensive coordinators there. That plays in his favor now, because a lot of those offensive coordinators ran a lot of pro offenses there. So he's coming into the league already, I think, offensive savvy. He comes off as an extremely smart individual. Good instances of him reading his blocks and pressing the line of scrimmage well, and those kind of things. And look, if you can turn a 3-yard run into a 5-yard run, that means a lot. And how many times did we see him at Alabama get a lot of good hard yards after contact, whether it be 2 yards in the backfield or 6 yards down the field, getting an extra 2 or 3 yards there. The last 2 years at Alabama, did a good job of catching the football out of the backfield. That's one other area where I think you're going to utilize them. But I mean, the Steelers have utilized, they used James Conner a lot out of the backfield as well too. But James Conner really did do a lot after the catch as far as breaking first contact and all. That's something that you would expect Najee Harris to do a lot more of. And look, it's got to be an all-around effort by him. I would expect over 300 touches for him in his rookie 2021 season. And, man, if you invest a first-round draft pick in a running back, I don't know if you know my thoughts on that.
Fungible.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you better hit. You better get one that can stay on the field for all 3 downs, which he can. And you better get one at the end of the year. You better look at that successful run rate, and it better be over 50%.
Yeah. Yeah, that's outstanding analysis. And Dave, kind of shifting gears a little bit, staying on the offense. I know your affection for George Kittle, so kind of want to talk about the tight end group a little bit. Eric Ebron was interviewed last week, and it seems like that guy's always smiling. He's got some pretty quirky comments. I know Pat Freiermuth coming in. You talked about him at length on the Terrible podcast with Alex, and just, you know, what he offers in terms of a receiver, maybe not so much explosiveness, but more consistency. But then also Gentry, what is Zach Gentry going to offer? I believe this is year 3 for him. You know, does he take a step this year? Is he able to contribute? And then, you know, how does that tight end room look together with Ebron, with Freiermuth, with Gentry? I know there's been talk of, 2-3 tight end sets. You know, what's your take on the tight end position this year?
I wish I could wax poetically for 15 minutes about Zach Gentry and paint a nice picture for you and all like that, but I'd be blowing smoke up you at that point. Yeah. And anybody would at this point. I mean, this is a guy that played, very minimal snaps as a rookie and looked very, very overwhelmed in the games that he saw those snaps in. Fast forward to last season, played 20-something snaps and really didn't look too terribly comfortable on the field. Now, it was a small sample size, and then he went down with a knee injury. So for anybody to sit here and tell you, oh man, Zach Gentry's going to really bust out this year, it's all just pure speculation, because there's nothing on tape. So until we see something more from, have a larger sample size on Zach Gentry, it's unfair to talk about him. I really believe that, because there's just not enough on tape. This is a converted quarterback to tight end. He's got size. I mean, he's got to learn how to block first. He got to learn how to block and contribute on special teams. He's got to make the roster. Make the roster first, and then we'll talk about Zach Gentry as the season goes on there. The rest of the tight end room, you can't put Eric Ebron on a base defensive end and expect him to block it. It's unfair for Eric Ebron. It's unfair for the person calling the play. It's unfair for the running back, all like that. They do have a guy now in Pat Freiermuth now, though, that the deeper that I got into his tape, especially his run blocking tape, the more I like the kid. He's not going to run away from anybody as far as a receiver. He's more of a possession type guy. Those kind of things. Obviously, great in the red zone. He's got really, really good hands to secure the football. The biggest aspect I'm looking for him is how can they indeed get the two tight ends on the field more this year. And what can they do with that? If they get the two tight ends on the field and the opposing defense goes large, matches it with a large grouping, can they stay a confined set and then run out of that? Can they literally run out of a two tight end set with Ebron and Freiermuth on the field? When they put the smaller group on the field, can they collapse down and then run against that? Conversely, if they get into two tight end personnel grouping and the opposing defense wants to put larger bodies on the field, to help combat that, then they have the ability to flex both those guys out and really turn it into 11 personnel type grouping, because for all practical purposes, Eric Ebron's a wide receiver and functions more as a wide receiver, can do some things for you out of the slot there. So I've been dreaming about running more 12 personnel for years. But if you do run more 12 personnel that has two tight ends on the field, who are you going to leave off the field? That's the tough thing there. So I believe that the uptick in 12 personnel when I see it, but rest assured, you really need to track the stats and the success rates, not only run, but pass success rates when they do put the 12 personnel out there. Look, you go back to, 2008, 9, 10, along those lines, Steelers ran a lot of two tight end personnel. Had the fullback on the field and all like that. But once again, in today's NFL, you see a lot of 11 personnel, a lot of three wide receivers on the field. So if you're not in 11 personnel, which one of those wide receivers are you going to pull off the field to do that? And if you do pull one of those wide receivers off the field, you better have play success on the backside of it.
Right. Great. Well, hey, Dave, kind of bringing this home, just shifting to the defense here. Two more questions for you. Before we wrap up, again, just appreciative of your time here tonight. But just looking at the defense, I know depth, you hit on that side being a concern. I think at the inside linebacker position, that's been addressed a bit with Buddy Johnson. But still on the outside, Cassius Marsh as your third guy up is a bit concerning. I think looking at corner, there's some questions there. And looking at that Cleveland game, and really there were multiple games last season where the run defense looked suspect, whether that was due to the injuries to Devin Bush and to Dupree at inside and outside linebacker. But just what's your take on the defense as a whole? Do you think that if that depth is tested, that's what's going to hold this defense back? And, just your perspective on what's going to transpire this year.
Well, getting the quarterback of your defense back and obviously a former first round draft pick and good athlete, Devin Bush, obviously another year more experience, won't hurt this year. So that's plus number one. That's assuming that, he can pick up where he left off in week six after suffering that knee injury last year there. Second, you mentioned Buddy Johnson. Gonna be a long season if you have to see Buddy Johnson play a lot of snaps on defensive side of football. This really needs to be a red shirt year for him. He really needs to make his mark on special teams first and foremost. So something's probably gone wrong if you see Buddy Johnson playing really any high volume, you know, hopefully, you know, maybe get in a couple of kneel down games or something like that. So not counting on him. I think Spillane can be serviceable alongside Devin Bush. We'll see what happens with Vince Williams. I'm not totally convinced that he makes it, but I mean, stranger things obviously have happened there. This team got obliterated at the inside linebacker position last year. You lost Devin Bush in week 6 and a couple, I think you got about 6 or 7 game run with Spillane, then he went down. Then you're looking at Avery Williamson and Marcus Allen playing meaningful snaps. That can't happen, and you survive in 2021. You got to find a number 3 outside linebacker there that can absorb some snaps without a drop off in play, because you just cannot expect T.J. Watt and Alex Highsmith to play week in, week out, play 90% of the snaps and all like that. I'm not convinced Cassius Marsh is that guy. I love Quincy Roche, but I think it's a lot to ask him to do a lot of the same things that Alex Highsmith did during his rookie season there. I think he's still got a little bit of refining to do, especially against the run as well. I will not be shocked one iota if this team goes out and adds an outside linebacker some way, shape, or form here in the next 80 something days here. I think that has to happen here, because I think you got to get somebody that you can trust that can play hopefully either side, that can help you get Highsmith and Watt off the field at various times during a game without a drop off in play. Gonna be interesting, and we'll see if Carlos Davis can grow a little bit more and maybe alleviate some of the usage of Tyson Alualu, who has found a fountain of youth last couple of years. We already talked earlier in the show, I think, about who's going to play that nickel. What's going to happen in sub package right now? Are you going to end up seeing Cameron Sutton being the nickel and James Pierre being the outside corner in those situations? Or are you going to see a guy like Antoine Brooks Jr. Be the at least get the opportunity to pick up where Mike Hilton left off? That's going to be interesting to watch that all unfold here during training camp here. I think you're obviously fine at the safety position. Terrell Edmonds has gotten a little bit better each year. Obviously not going to be on anybody's Pro Bowl or All-Pro list, but you know, as long as he can continue to improve, I think he'll be fine there. And of course, Minka, Joe Hayden. As long as Joe Hayden stays healthy, I think you're fine on that side. And, you know, Cameron Sutton, I think he can play on the outside. Look, if you pass rushing and coverage goes hand in hand. So if you pass rush it doing their job, your secondary is probably going to pay the price for that. Also, if your coverage isn't all that great, you know, sometimes teams will take advantage of that as well.
Yeah. So Dave, if you package all that together and you look at the 2021 season offense, defense, and you look at that schedule, can you give us an early offseason prediction on how you think the Steelers will finish, and will they make the postseason, and how far will they go if they do make it that far?
I mean, I'm not trying to punt here, but I mean, it's really too early for me. Here's been my overarching thought right now. I mean, I think this team has got to add some depth in a couple areas here, specifically outside linebacker for starters there. I'd like to see them add maybe another third tight end, like a Jesse James or something like that. I mean, you could potentially maybe use another versatile safety back there as well, too, because what's going to happen if Edmonds or Minka miss some time there? Going to have to wait and see how some of this stuff, comes about during the rest of the offseason here before I get real comfortable throwing out predictions. And we all know how quickly those predictions, I mean, you're 3 injuries away from it just being, oh, man, what the heck was I thinking there? But, look, I think this is a 9 or 10 win team at best from where I sit. It's a very, very tough schedule. Man, that I don't know if you saw what the article I wrote early this morning about the 4-game stretch that the Steelers have there between, you go from Baltimore and then on a short week to Minnesota for a Thursday night game, and then you play Tennessee Titans, and then congratulations, you've won. You get to play the Kansas City Chiefs at that point.
Right after Christmas.
that's a tough stretch. And oh yeah, you for the bonus round, you get to end your season with Baltimore and Cleveland. Yeah. So, man, that's tough. You look at the schedule top to bottom. You look at even you're starting in week one against Buffalo in Buffalo. That's a tough. That might, if they win that game, look, I think that might qualify as one of Mike Tomlin's top 10 wins of his entire NFL career, to be honest with you, because the Steelers are going to go into that game six and a half point underdogs, and they haven't played, you know, they obviously haven't beaten Buffalo, I think, in a couple of times now there. That's a tough, tough chore there. So from where I sit right now, a 9 or 10 win team, but look, I'm that same guy that thinks I'll be surprised if a team wins 11 games in that AFC North. I think 10 or 9 wins might get it in. I think you could actually see 3 teams potentially come out of the AFC North in the playoffs with this, you know, extra game and all like that. So from where I sit right now, 9 or 10 win team, and, you know, that's about as far as I've gotten in this right now.
Well, hopefully this year with the most difficult schedule was like 2008 when they had the most difficult schedule. And we know how that ended. Probably a little bit stronger of a defense back then, but similar questions on the O-line, probably a worse offensive line than they had now. But, oh, yeah, you had a younger Roethlisberger. But, Dave, just want to thank you so much for coming on and joining us. I know that you're super busy. I know how much content you guys pump out on the Depot, and it's all great stuff. Listeners, if you haven't been to the Depot, you may not have a pulse, but make sure you check it out and check out the podcast, the Terrible Podcast. It's phenomenal. But again, Dave, just truly grateful. Thank you for
being thanks here. So much, Dave.
All right, my pleasure, guys, and you know, shout out to my all the contributors on my side as well too, because you know it's obviously a team effort. It's just not me as well too, but I appreciate all the kind words. Appreciate you having me on tonight.
Thanks. Yeah.
Take care.
And we are back, and Andrew, we sat down for 2 consecutive weeks now with Alex Kozura, the Jedi Knight, Dave Bryan, the George Washington of Steelers podcasts.
I just want to say that I gave you that analogy.
That's a lie.
No, that's not a lie.
It's a lie.
Okay. Whatever.
What's your take on Dave? What stands out to you? What are you walking away from that conversation with?
He has a depth of knowledge that I think is similar to Alex's, but he has his own unique approach, obviously, as you heard throughout. He thinks a little bit differently about the game and about how he watches the game. I just liked, I asked him this directly. I liked his drive. There was something really, infectious about that. The guy was clearly energetic, moving forward, and I'm sure he had 10 things that he was going to do as soon as we got off the meeting with him, and I'm sure he's doing 10 things right now. You know, I feel as though he's not somebody who is easily overwhelmed. He just does. He just is somebody who is actively pursuing a variety of tasks, all to a level that are pretty exceptional. Right. And one of those things he talks about was the coffee business, and then of course the Steelers Depot. I mean, the guy doesn't do things, you know, in some sort of like, you know, sleepwalking motion. He goes full throttle all the way.
He's not half mule.
Right.
Did you like that?
Yeah, I got it. Thank you.
Yeah, the one thing that jumped out to me, he said, you know, 22 out of 24 hours, he's on the computer, he's on his phone doing work, digesting content for the Depot, and it does show. I mean, if you see the number of articles that are cranked out every day on the Depot, and not just run-of-the-mill, oh, here's this news nugget.
They're unique takes with good sort of, you know, analysis and unique approaches to whatever, you know, they're writing. I mean, there's stuff coming out all the time.
Right. And it was cool to peer behind the curtain to kind of see those experiences and events that shaped Dave. You know, he got really honest and transparent with us about his upbringing and some of the things he experienced as a really at 8 years old.
Yeah.
And how that kind of manifests itself in the drive that he does have.
My immediate connection was made early on in that podcast where he was talking about his dad a little bit. And my my father was the youngest of five kids, and he was somebody, I don't know, he's a fair weather fan, I guess you could say. But I mean, he was an Eagles fan first and foremost, but they got color TV, and the first game he ever saw was the Niners, and he loved that gold and red. And so he became sort of a fan by, you know, extension. And I started rooting for anybody that the 49ers played. And the year before he passed away, 94, the Chargers, who beat the Steelers to go to the Super Bowl, were playing the 49ers, who they beat the Cowboys to go to the Super Bowl. And I remember watching that game with him. I think it might have been the last game I watched with him. And I just rooted for the Cowboys just to annoy him. And I always like that idea. You've talked about that a little bit with your son and living here on the eastern side of Pennsylvania.
Oh my God, if he's going to be an Eagles fan, so help me God. That's all I got to say. There's no.
But I know what that feels like to root against your dad's team just for the sake of doing it. But but what I would say is, like, for me, when the Eagles won the Super Bowl in 2017, my immediate first thought was, of course, my dad. We didn't root actively against the Eagles in any form or fashion. I mean, my first football games were Eagles games. So I liked that, you know, regardless of which way you take it. You know, sports fandom always does have a family connection to it, whether it be, you know, an uncle or a grandfather's funeral or your dad or something like that. There's always a family connection to sports. And I think that's where my initial and sustaining attraction to it comes from.
Right. I also thought that it was interesting about how Dave talked about over the years his ability to disconnect his fandom from the writing and speaking about the team. And it's almost, and I said it in jest, but I really did mean it honestly. It's almost like an enlightenment.
Yeah, right.
If you're familiar with the concept of nirvana and interpenetrating arising in Buddhism, it's the ability to objectively step back and look at things emotionless.
And I find that interesting because I think I don't know if I want to get there. Yeah. Because we just talked about a little bit at the beginning of the podcast, Cordell Stewart. There's a romanticism to my fandom that I love, and that I don't know if I can fully articulate it, but when you become analytical and you begin to dissect parts of that team, there is a part of the fandom, there is a part of that romanticism that shifts or you know, transforms into something quite different.
Yeah.
For me, the Steelers, I mean, I can't tell you that feeling I get when I turn them on. I mean, my family knows what it means to me. And I like that feeling so much that I'm afraid to pull it down, to be more analytical, to be more rational. Because for me, sports is always about being irrational. The 1997 team, they didn't, you know, lose to the Broncos. They just ran out of time against the Broncos. You know what I mean? Like, my fandom is driven almost exclusively by romance.
Right. Right. That's a very interesting take.
You know what I mean.
I know what you mean. I'm just making fun of you.
Yes, you're an English lit teacher. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well, I used to be. Now I'm a high school principal. Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Hey, speaking of high school principals, really quickly, I found it to be very interesting because next week we're going to do a little review, a little book review. I'm putting the pressure on Jeremy now of Cower's new book.
It's on. My analysis will be more thorough than yours.
I'll finish first.
Okay.
I've been reading for 2 days, and I'm on page 150, and you're on page 34.
Game on.
You're on page Terrell Edmonds.
I'm on page 38. So anyway, I wanted to kind of just wrap this up, just our reflection on Dave. But the one thing that I really appreciate about Dave, even as we were talking to him, he always brought it back to, well, where's the data that supports that? Now, he didn't come out and say that exclusively, where's the data? But he said, you know, everything he looks at on the site comes back to the tape. What do you see on the tape?
Right.
And that objective evidence. And I think that's really the unique thing that the Depot gives you that you don't get on a lot of sites. The contextualization articles that Dave does and other members of the Depot. And really the highest compliment that I could pay Dave, and I said this before we got on the air, that there are a few names. Then when they talk Steelers, I stop,
I listen and I pay attention. Ed Bouchette, Jerry Dulac, Mike Prezuda, Mark Caboli, Dave Bryan. And I'll even put Alex Cazor in there. But Dave, when Dave writes something, he's not just writing it because he has a whim. It's because there's fact to it. And he really is, whether people want to acknowledge it or not, because he doesn't write for the Post-Gazette or the Athletic. He's a legitimate source for the Steelers.
Yeah, he talked a little bit about his process, and I found that super interesting that he's not it is very systematic. When he's watching, he's not watching, you know, like a fan per se. I mean, he's watching like, you know, a journalist would in the press box. It just happens to be from Las Vegas, Nevada in his living room. And I don't particularly find that to be problematic because quite frankly, in 2020, that's how most journalists were working. Yeah. You know, there was nobody at the games.
Yeah.
At least largely throughout last season.
Yeah.
And I think that's a remarkable testament to his sight, is that it's not just fly by the wind sort of information.
Right. So if you haven't done so yet, please visit SteelersDepot.com, and you can follow Dave at SteelersDepot on Twitter. Again, if you're looking for a continual feed of Steelers news, information, analysis, that is your one-stop shop. So, Dave, if you're listening, much gratitude to you, man. We appreciate you very much. And now it's time for Andrew. Are you ready? You embarrassed me last week with your poor excuse of a
I want to finish the idea really quickly. I was talking about you're the high school principal, and I found there to be that's a leadership role that I don't think a lot of people understand. Everybody went to high school.
I don't understand it.
Right. But it's an enormous entity that is responsible for a lot of different people. We're reading the Cowher book, and we're going to talk about that next week. But I found some correlations between, or at least what I found to be, some interesting tidbits that I was hoping that next week you could talk a little bit about there's things you learned about from his memoir and how you could and potentially apply it to high school leadership. Because I think leadership is leadership, regardless of whether or not it's a football team, a high school, or a Boy Scout troop. I think there's some sort of overlapping ideas here that I would love to talk about. And we're gonna talk about that next week.
So next week will be episode 11, the Heart and Still episode, where we dig in to Bill Cowher's book. Think we can get Cowher on the show?
Yeah. I mean, what's his phone number? 1-800-JAWLINE?
We could try, but I don't know if we're going to have great success there. All right, here we go. Six pack. You ready?
No.
You're not. I know you're not, so this is going to be sad. All right, Mr. 1997 AFC title game.
You're going to crush. I was 11, so you're going to crush my
memory. I don't care. You're 35 now, so no excuses. Name me three wide receivers from that 1997 Steelers team. And you can even throw a tight end in there. Name three.
Oh, was Yancey Thigpen still on the team?
There's one.
Was Troy Edwards on the team?
Nope.
Was he drafted? When is he drafted? 95, 96?
Come on, man. I even throw you a bone. You can put a
Jermaine. I hate you.
Right you now. Fell.
No,
Mark Bruner.
Mark Bruner.
Charles Johnson, Courtney Hawkins, Will Blackwell. All right, we're moving on.
I forget. Wow, those names I know those names, but those names don't.
Here's an easy one for you.
Okay.
How many sacks is T.J. Watt going to have this year?
I'm going to go out there and just say. I'm going to say 12.
12.
Yeah.
Ew.
I fear he's going to draw a lot of attention. He's going to get a lot of wear.
If he has 12 sacks this year, I will be depressed.
But I fear sort of like Dave Bryan said on the interview, there's a lot of pressure on those outside linebackers, and they need to find somebody who can rotate in and out because they can't play 90% of this.
Cassius.
Right. But I mean, there was somebody on the other side last year who, before his injury, took a lot of attention from that offensive line and took chips from the tight end and stuff like that. I think TJ's his production will go down. His influence will not.
See, I'm going to believe in Alex Highsmith and what he can do in year two, and I'm going to take your romance perspective and put my chips on the table for either Quincy Roche Jamar Watson out of Kentucky or Calvin Bundage. I think they're going to be all right. All right.
Well, give me a number.
17.
All right. That's good.
17.
That's good.
That'll be his highest total. Better chance to break out this year, wide receiver, Steelers. Deontay, Chase Claypool. Now, I know they've had big seasons, but who's going to take that next step to become elite?
Chase. He's got the size. He's got the speed. He's got the hands. Deontay's been in the league a while. I don't want to say he's hit a ceiling because he certainly hasn't, but I just feel as though it's, you know, you've seen what he can do and you've seen what Chase can do. And there's a wide, you know, gap between those two.
I would actually answer that the complete opposite way. Really? I would go with Johnson. Johnson is shifty. He's got the ability to stop on a dime.
I guess defenders. It depends. What's the definition of breakout? Because if you're looking at pure statistics,
I'm saying elite. I'm saying hitting an elite level. Okay. So these guys have been good, and you could make the argument that Claypool's only entering year two. Deontay's been around a little bit longer. It can go either way. I think they're going to have better seasons than they had the year before. They're different types of receivers. I just have this feeling about Johnson. Again, this is anti-Dave Bryan, but I don't have anything to substantiate.
I hope you're right. There is something about Claypool's ability to play big. I know he is big, but I mean, some of those plays, Dave Bryan talked about that Eagles game. I mean, that game was impressive, man. Yeah. I mean, that Deontay has not had a game like that.
Right.
And that was Chase's, I don't know, seventh game or whatever it was, fifth game or something.
Yeah. Yep. All right, next one. Quickly, finishing order of the AFC North, starting with your first.
Steelers, Browns, Ravens, Bengals. And that is purely my desire and hope.
Nice. If the Steelers were a food, what would they be?
Pizza.
Pizza?
Yeah, they're perfect. What? There's nothing better than pizza.
What?
What do you want me to say? Pierogi?
No.
What do you want? What are they? You don't like when I answer quickly, I think.
All right, this one is going to blow your mind.
Well, no, you name me a food. That
this is a my six pack. You get a shot at me next week, and then it'll be lame. This is a hard one. This is going to close it out. You have three choices. If you were picking one of these coaches to be the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, who would it be? Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, Mike Tomlin.
Bill Cowher.
What?
What? You cannot argue with every answer. Bill Cowher.
Bill Cowher over Chuck Knoll over Mike Tomlin. Justification.
So I am immersed in Bill Cowher philosophy now.
So it's recency bias.
It's recency bias. Yeah, I'll give you that. But also one of the things that I think made him a fundamentally good coach, and we'll talk about this more next week, is his ability to adapt, to self-reflect, and to be a teacher first and foremost. And he talks about that a lot in his book. I mean, he was an education major at NC State, go Wolfpack, and he was in tune with what it meant to be somebody who was teaching a skill or a concept. And there's great stories in that book that talk about that. There's also this small section of the book in which he talks about that transition from Knoll to himself. And Knoll was a, you know, sort of a short answer type of guy. He was not going to be somebody who coddled you or helped, you know, bring you along or patch up your bruised ego. And that's a important part of a football coach maybe 60 years ago.
Yeah.
I think that Cowher brings a self-reflection that is incredibly important in today's game.
Yeah.
That does not mean that Tomlin does not. I love Tomlin's ability to connect with his players, but there's something about Cowher and his connection to teaching and the mechanics and the theory behind teaching that I really am attracted to.
And really, to go back to your pizza analogy, you can't go wrong. Knoll, Cowher, Tomlin.
Right.
Pizza,
I mean, three coaches since 1969.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really insane. I think
you need a new stat because that's like the eighth time you said it. It's like you're effectively in remarkable.
Yeah, it has to be. I mean, 1969, it's so long ago. It's sort of hard to contextualize that. 1969, 52 years ago. It's a long time.
Yeah, that's the age I'm going to retire.
52. I don't want to retire. I'm petrified of it.
Yeah. Don't be afraid, Andrew.
Do you? I mean, think about 1969, though. Nixon was in his first year as presidency. Wasn't even alive. We just landed on the moon. You weren't alive.
I wasn't a glimmer in my mom or dad's eye.
I was just going to go, where are you going with that? 1969, my mother was 2 and my dad was 4.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's bizarre to think about.
I think this is like the family episode because we kind of referenced several of our family members.
I want to learn more about Uncle Motor and how he got that nickname because that nickname is like top notch.
He was a great man and always took time out for me, spent a lot of time with me. I was very close with my cousins and my aunt and my uncle. And maybe we'll get Cousin Chad on here one time and he could talk about Uncle Motor.
I think what we should do is we should talk about fandom too, because this podcast and this interview with Dave Bryan got me really interested in fandom. Like,
yeah,
your dad grew up in Pittsburgh, and so being a Pittsburgh Steelers fan is sort of in the water, so to speak. But there's a that Jeremy is trying to distract me here. But there's a reason why people remain, you know, dedicated to a specific sports teams over the course of time. And I think, as I alluded to or said explicitly earlier, I mean, I think family has a lot to do with that, you know. And I think distance can also help that. You know, your dad lives outside of Pittsburgh now. You live outside of Pittsburgh. I've never lived in Pittsburgh. Neither has Dave Bryan. Cousin Chad doesn't live in Pittsburgh. I mean, but there's something that attracts – attracts, that's not the right word. There's something that compels all of us to remain sort of attached to it. And I think there's an interesting point to discuss there.
You could take the man out of Pittsburgh, but you can't take the Pittsburgh out of the man.
I think Coach Cower says that in his book. Maybe about page like 36. He may not be there yet.
Well, thank you so much for listening. It's great to be able to do these weekly with Andrew. We are enjoying this process. Continue to share our work. We are grateful for you doing that. We're grateful for you following the site, listening to us, reading our work. It means so much to us. We will be back next week with another full-length edition of the Still Study Podcast, Episode 11. We're going to dig into Cower's book. You're going to find the final installment in Andrew's chapter 1 of the Big Ben Project. The Findlay, Ohio part will be coming up after that. And this has been a fun ride, man. This is
10 weeks in.
10 weeks in. And we're not stopping. So, Andrew, always great talking football with you, man.
Sometimes.
Peace. Have a great weekend, everyone.